glory, and yet we live in a geographic area that is governed by a set of laws, and there are officials in place to oversee these laws, and we are, as the Bible tells us, to submit ourselves to every ordinance of man. But how does that, when those two kingdoms clash, which they sometimes do, what must we do as believers? And last week we talked about the importance of choosing always to obey God rather than man. In the Old Testament, we have an example of a man who did just that, and I am blessed with this man's life. It's a remarkable story that we find. The stakes of loyalty are very high. And the unique thing about this particular story that we're going to look at this morning, the unique thing is that this man was not only a subject of a government and also a citizen of the heavenly kingdom, but he was also very involved in that earthly government. And so that raises the stakes of loyalty. The man is Daniel, and the story is told in Daniel chapter 6, and I'd like for us to turn there today. In the Old Testament, before Christ came, one way that God chose to reveal his glory and power to the world was to promote into the governments of man his men and women. Think of Joseph and Moses and Esther and Mordecai and others, and this includes Daniel. This story here that we're going to read this morning from Daniel 6 contains a nice plot. You have a good man, you have covetous colleagues, you have a powerful but fragile king, you have an ultimatum, and you even have some hungry lions thrown in there as well. But it's more than just a story. It's more than just a story. It's an example. It points to something. It points to someone. We want to discover that today. And as we approach this chapter, where this is set in history, is there has been an event, a cataclysmic event that has just taken place recently, in that the world's powerful empire, the golden head on the statue, Babylon, has fallen. It's collapsed. A new king has come in with his new government, and this is set up now. And this is where we enter as we begin reading in Daniel chapter 6. So I'll begin reading, and there's then some lessons that we want to learn from this man, Daniel, and some key words that I want us to think about in our time together today. I'm going to read verses 1 and 2. It pleased Darius, this is Darius the king, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps, to be over the whole kingdom, and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them, so that the king would suffer no loss. The word I want us to think about today from these two verses, it's not in these two verses, but I want us to think about the word essential. The word essential. Daniel was essential to the success of this new Median-Persian government. We use the word essential quite a bit, and maybe somewhat in humor these days, don't we? Are we essential? Are we not essential? Are we essential workers? Or are we irrelevant? But it's amazing to me, when I think of Daniel, who had a high rank in the government of King Nebuchadnezzar, he was close to the top. When this government was overthrown, the new king selected this Daniel and put him in a chief position. In fact, it's so amazing. I was trying to think of some way for us to see how unusual and how shattering or how shaking that is. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is a poor illustration, probably, but during the height of the Troubles, if a Sinn Féin leader would have been invited to the British Parliament and given a role in Parliament, maybe that could help us understand a bit how amazing this was, that this Daniel was taken as a trusted advisor by a king who had just overthrown the government of King Nebuchadnezzar. The kingdoms of the earth ebb and flow. And we sang that song this morning in the back there, 442. And I like this verse 3. Our little systems have their day. They have their day and cease to be. It's possible that the author of this song had the governments of the world in mind when he wrote about this. Think of the powerful rulers in history. Nebuchadnezzar, Alexander the Great, Caesar, Charlemagne, Genghis Khan, Abraham Lincoln, Winston Churchill, and you can keep on adding to those names that I gave. They're like vapor. They were here for a while. They're gone. Isaiah 40:15 says, "Behold, the nations are like a drop in a bucket, and they're counted as a very small dust on the scales." Think of the most powerful governments in the world today, in contemporary times. That's what God considers these to be, the systems that come and go. And to me, the fact that Daniel was a man of rank in two successive powerful governments, it's a picture to me that shows how inconsequential the kingdoms, the powerful kingdoms of this world are to God. And yet, how the man of the kingdom, the people of the kingdom, can transition from one to the next, and God will still use them. I was just awestruck when I thought of that. Kingdoms rise and fall. Kings conquer and then they are defeated. But the man of God, who is a representative of the kingdom of God, continues from one to the next and is useful. That's the word I want us to think about, is essential or useful in any kingdom, in any place. Daniel was valuable to Darius. He was experienced in leadership, as we know from the earlier chapters in Daniel, and if we would continue reading on, Daniel had been given a special gift, and that was to predict the future. And what king wouldn't want someone in his cabinet who could say what was happening next? Daniel had proven himself to be trustworthy, reliable, and unbending. We may not want to compare ourselves to Daniel this morning, but I just would like to challenge us or to ask us, as we think about our relationship in the government of this world, and particularly here in Ireland, are we as Christians, are we as followers of Jesus, considered essential workers to the government? Now, they might not always think of it consciously in that way, but I'm just asking us this morning, are we law-abiding? Do we contribute to the good of society? Are we doing things that detract from being essential? I remember some boys back in Ohio who took their high-powered rifles and shot holes in the road signs. And when their fathers heard about what they had done, they took these boys to the local government officials, and they tried to teach them a lesson about the importance of responsibility and respect for government. And I appreciated the father's seriousness about teaching them that lesson. Let's not take the government for granted or despise it in any way. Even something as simple as school students collecting rubbish alongside the roadways. You're being an essential worker. You can bless the government of Ireland by collecting rubbish rather than throwing it out the window of your car. Catherine the Great, Catherine, Queen of Russia, she invited the persecuted Mennonites to come to her land, partly because of their gift in farming. She knew that they would that these people would bless the country. Later, these people came to the Americas with the same invitation and for the same reason. Are you an essential worker? Let's keep on reading. Verses 3 through 9. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." So these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, "King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and the satraps, the counselors and advisors, have consulted together to establish a royal decree and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter." Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. The word I want us to think about for a little bit here is the word excellent. We read that Daniel was of an excellent spirit. The word excellent means, perhaps not what we think it means, that he was number one or he was tops. But it means that he was abounding, he was overflowing. The attitude was always right. He always had enough, and he was giving, he was a giver. He had an excellent spirit. Then we have the word in verse 3, he was also faithful. That's in verse 4. That word means sure, steady. How old was Daniel? Well, when Daniel was first brought to Babylon, he was in his mid-teens, maybe the age of Joseph or Patrick. And we remember the story that took place in Daniel 1. It's pretty incredible to think of a young man away from his family being that firm with his belief and being that consistent. Daniel now is probably pushing 90, somewhere between the age of 80 and 90. He had served at least 3 kings. That is 65 plus years of excellence and faithfulness. To me, that is impressive, but that is also convicting. You see, I have friends, mentors, I call them, who I knew them 30 years ago, and today they're faithful. I just love to talk to these people. They've only grown in their faith. since I've known them. But I also have some acquaintances who were very close to me when I was young. And again, these were older people, older men, who I would have considered as mentors as well. And I was very close to them. In fact, the one man prayed with me when I first gave my heart to the Lord as a young boy. These men, I'm thinking of three of them who were close to me, are not faithful to God today. It was like they were a flame then, but the flame flared and then died. They were excellent then, but they're not excellent now. Daniel, for 65 plus years, was excellent and grew in his faith. Now, we read how the other two governors, and remember, there were three governors, Daniel, two other men, on a committee, sort of an executive committee over these provincial satraps or presidents or governors. See, there were, in this new empire, there were 120 provinces, a widespread, far-flung empire. And each of these men had the appointment over one of these fairly good-sized provinces. And Daniel and his three friends were over these 120. These were to give account to them. And then Daniel was being considered for the role as the chief governor. The other two overseers on this committee did not like this, and they plotted against Daniel out of jealousy. And what did they do? They searched his past record, the record of his public life. Now, for a man who has been in public service like Daniel, who has been a servant, remember that Daniel was also a slave. He was there out of compulsion, but willingly. He would not have chosen to be in Babylon. His heart was set on Jerusalem, but he was there, and he was being faithful. But he had a record. And it says these people searched his past life, and they could find no fault or error. Now, I understand that recently there is an opening on the U.S. Supreme Court. And the President of the United States was to make an announcement yesterday with a nomination for a candidate that needs to be vetted by the U.S. Senate and Congress for this position. The person, the individual who will be, who has been nominated, will face a tremendous scrutiny in Congress in the next several weeks. In fact, they'll dig up things in this person's public life and private life if they can find any fault or error. And they probably will find something. Then they need to decide, is this enough to keep this person from actually being sworn in as a justice on the Supreme Court? Compare that to Daniel. These people, 120 of them, 122 of them, were looking and looking and searching, all of them. There was nothing, there was not an error or a fault. Error is an omission. Daniel did not omit doing something that he should have done. Verse 3, also the word fault is there. The word fault has the idea of a corruption or a scandal. Daniel was not involved in any kind of a corrupt scandal or a sin or something that he should not have done that he was doing. Friends, this morning, are you building a life of excellence? The Scottish preacher Alexander McLaren said, "The world may not know the details of your doctrine or the intimacies of your worship with God," and I'm adding a few pronouns there, "but they can tell a bad temper, selfishness, conceitedness, or dishonesty when they see it. The world is a very poor critic of your Christianity, but it is a very sufficient one of your conduct." The world is a very poor critic of your Christianity or your profession of it, but it is a very sufficient one of your conduct. Are you building a life of excellence? And I just put a word in here for us as we face the onslaught of electronic communication in this information technology age that we live in. Personal information is accessible and it's permanent, at least as we think of the word permanent. Integrity is essential. You do not want to be an 80-year-old Daniel and have some kind of a satrap entrap you because of something that you posted when you were 16 years old. Maybe in foolishness. Just think about that. This is just a little aside now, but an observation that I made about how earthly governments work. And just a really, really good reason for us not to be involved in public politics. In verse 1, this governor, or this king, set over his kingdom 120 satraps or governors. And I'm assuming that this was not just done randomly. He just didn't pick people like eeny, meeny, miny, mo. They were qualified, at least basically qualified for the job. Then verse 2 continues with the setup of the sort of the bureaucracy of this government, how it was all going to run. And then we see why in the last few words in verse 2 that I found kind of interesting. Not that the people would be blessed, but it says that the king would suffer no loss. And isn't it interesting how politicians will sometimes spout sort of idealistic slogans that we're here to help the people. But sort of in the end, what it really is there's a lot of self-interest, there's a lot of self-protection, there's a lot of self in government. And I am sure, I know of politicians who really have the heart of the people in mind. But often, and maybe even most of the time, it's not fully that way. I think it's so ironic that these trusted governors, in one day's time, and with one forcing of a ruling, where they basically had the pen in their hands and handed it to him and said, "Sign this law," they made a fool out of the king in one day's time. I just found that really interesting. While he was looking out for his own interests, they were also looking out for theirs, weren't they? The third word I want us to think about is the word earnest, and I'm going to read verses 10 through 15. "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. And they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. 'Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions?' The king answered and said, 'Thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter.' So they answered and said before the king, That Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day.' And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, 'Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians, that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed.'" Did you notice how often in this story it is mentioned that the law of the Medes and Persians is an unalterable one? I think that's interesting too, and that's added for effect because we'll see just how sure that law really was. But I would like for us to think about Ernest. Daniel was earnest in his devotion to God. The definition for the word earnest is something that results from showing sincere or intense conviction. This sham law that had been made, this unalterable law that had been made, was made for the sole purpose of putting Daniel in a position where they knew what he would do. But isn't it such a refreshing thing to think about Daniel when he realized what had happened? He went into his house, and then he went upstairs to his upper room, and his windows were open to Jerusalem, and it says he did what he had done before. He prayed 3 times that day, because this was his custom since early days. And when I think of early days, I'm thinking back of Joseph and Patrick days. See, he had developed this habit, this practice, this ritual of praying on his knees 3 times a day. And as I read this, there was quite a bit of personal conviction that was taking place in my heart, because I realized have I been this devout? Have I been this earnest? Have I had this practice since early days? And I confess, the answer is no. Daniel was a man of prayer. Daniel was a captive taken from Judah. And Daniel longed to go back there. This was the place of the house of God. This is where God had manifested his presence, and this was the land of promise. And Daniel, I believe, knew from the prophet Jeremiah that it was not going to be very long until this time of captivity would be over. As a matter of fact, it was just a few more years. And Daniel was longing for Jerusalem. Redemption was drawing nigh. So why not kneel? Why not pray? And I would just like to encourage us in our prayers. We heard some good teaching on spending time in prayer this morning. Thank you, Duane. Kneeling in prayer, it's a good practice. It's a good habit to get into. The Bible talks about a number of postures of prayer, and so I can say that kneeling is not the only way to pray, but it is a good way. Peter knelt before the Lord. Paul says that he bows his knees to the Lord Jesus Christ. The colonial American school teacher that you school students are studying, will be studying about this year, Christopher Dock, was found dead on his knees. It's quite possible that he was praying for his students and died there. Praying like this takes dedication. We heard about time this morning. I don't have time. Well, think of this Daniel, a very, very busy man in government. And maybe he didn't have time, but he made time 3 times a day to pray. Martin Luther was once asked, well, what are you going to do today? What's your schedule looking like? And he said this, I have so much to do today that I must spend the first 3 hours in prayer. Just note with me, too, the contents of Daniel's prayer. He was a captive. He was in a dilemma. And yet, it says he made his supplications, but he also prayed a prayer of thanksgiving. Sometimes when we're in a crisis time, we don't think about the things that we should be praying for or the thanksgivings that we should be making. What do your prayers sound like? Daniel could have rationalized. You know, it's only for 30 days. I can walk about doing my regular business, and I can just pray quietly. Nobody will know. I can continue my communication with God. I'll just keep the window closed for a month. Or I could even offer a token prayer to King Darius. He's my boss, after all. But all those things would have been resorting to fear. They would have been compromising. No, when Daniel heard the decree, he kept on doing what he had always done. He could have also called the rest of his countrymen from the surrounding area there in Babylon and said, let's go down to the palace of King Darius. Let's get our prayer mats out. Let's write some posters that this is a discrimination against the Jews. He didn't do that either. He might have bordered on being prideful had he done that. Remember, these people knew that Daniel was earnest. Are you earnest in your devotion to God? If you were accused of being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? Daniel knew full well the result of his actions would probably be a visit to the lion's den. But this was not just some kind of a sterile relationship or mechanical prayers that Daniel had been praying all these years. In the 65 years from the age of 15 to 80, if he really prayed, and I believe he did three times a day, just those three daily prayers alone, he probably prayed more than that, but those three prayers alone would total 71,175 prayers that Daniel prayed. I was going to play an audio of a lion roaring. We had some technical difficulties, so I won't do that this morning. But I'll just give you some facts about lions that make me wonder if Daniel didn't hear the lions roaring from his upper room while he was praying. A lion can roar as loudly as 114 decibels, which is about 25 times louder than a petrol-powered lawnmower is. A lion's roar has been heard up to 10 kilometers away on a quiet night in Africa. 10 kilometers. A male lion can eat over 40 kilograms of meat in one meal. A lion's night vision is 6 times better than ours. Ancient kings, it's been documented, have actually captured lions and would use them in sport hunting, sort of like the local fox hunts. Can you imagine releasing wild lions and then trying to hunt them? But it's at least one early Assyrian king did that. And they also kept lions in structures or in enclosures for the purpose of executing criminals. So I'd like to read now what happened in this story from verse 16 on to the end. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets of his lords, and the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no musicians were brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? And I wonder if Daniel just didn't think about pausing a little bit and allowing the suspense to grow. It says, then Daniel said to the king, and I find this ironic too, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Now the king was exceedingly glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God. And the king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. Then King Darius wrote to all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever. The kingdom, his kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. Who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions? So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And fourthly, then, the word I want us to think about is the word example. Daniel is an example to us, an example of suffering for the sake of Christ. Suffering, you say, what kind of suffering did Daniel endure? Well, Daniel didn't know with absolute certainty what would actually happen to him in the lion's den. And Daniel, with that realization, still obeyed God rather than man. But then again, he submitted himself to the penalty that had been set up. Remember, last week I said submission is different than obedience. We always submit, even when we cannot obey. I don't believe that Daniel went kicking and screaming to the den of lions. Daniel is an example to us of suffering for the sake of Christ. How must that have been for Daniel? An 80 plus year old man, what do we call that? An octogenarian, right? None of us are there yet, right? I don't think so. Thrown down maybe several meters, a handful of meters into this den. No lights in there. And even tame animals bump and shuffle and make noises at night. And there he was. How must he have felt? And yet, there was an angel there. And I thought it was ironic that we read about an angel this morning in ministering to Jesus. I think the angel did more than just hold its hand over the lion's mouths. There was comfort there. Someone suggested rather preposterously that Daniel was kept safe in the lion's den because there were only one or two old lions in there and the place was large, so Daniel found a corner to hide in and thereby was kept safe. No, these were ferocious animals, and I read the rest of the story, so you know what happened. There were more than just one or two old lions in there. An interesting fact that I found too is one of those unalterable laws of the Medes and Persians was that if someone is found guilty, was it maybe a government official, is found guilty, the penalty for that guilt is borne by his entire family. And so that explains why the wives and the children were also cast in. Hebrews 11:33 talks about faith and gives one example that these people, through faith, did a number of things, including they stopped the mouths of lions. And that's in there because of Daniel. Daniel is an example to us of suffering for the sake of Christ. Daniel was rescued. Paul suffered too. Now think of Paul. The very end of his life, he lays his head on an executioner's block, and there is a glint of sunlight on an axe. Then the axe is brought down, and Paul's head is severed from his body. For Paul, it was quite different than it was for Daniel. And I can't explain to you why the result was different for each of these two men. But is personal preservation really the most important thing? No, it's not. I believe for both Paul and for Daniel and for anyone else who has suffered for the name of Christ, it is the glory of God that is the important thing. And isn't it so amazing how this king of the Medes and Persians and the king of the laws that cannot be changed, how this king, without even mentioning his law, gave a law that superseded any law and glorified God. Out of the mouth of a pagan king, the glory of God was pronounced to the nations. We sang about that this morning. So, for us practically, can it be by our example, Christian, are you listening? By our example, that the nation's laws, not just the written laws, but the laws on the hearts of the nation, can actually be changed? I think so. I think so. We have a tremendous influence. We have a tremendous influence. So, think of the words essential, excellent, earnest, and example. And I hope this will help us as we think of relating to the government of this land and in the decisions that we're called to make, that God and His name would be glorified in this nation and across the world. And we need to kneel for prayer, so let's do that now.
Everyone here.